Thank you so much. Okay, recordings have started. Well, welcome everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. And welcome to the DO GPLD Subsequent Procedures Subgroup B call on Tuesday, the 19th of February, 2018. On the call today, we currently have Anne Aikman-Scalise, Cheryl Langdon-Orr, Krista Taylor, Drew Wilson, Jeff Newman, Jessica Hooper, Jim Prendergast, and Ruben Kuehl. We do have apologies from Katrin Omer, Christine Durain, and Vanda Scardazzini. From staff, we have Julie Hemland, Steve Chan, and myself, Michelle DeSmiter. As a reminder, if you would please state your name so it appears clearly on the transcription, and I will turn the meeting back over to Julie Hemland. Please begin.
Thank you, Michelle. And Krista, are you starting or was it Ruben's? I'm sorry.
Ruben's is starting. Thanks.
Okay. Then Ruben's it is. Over to you, Ruben's.
Ruben's, if you're talking, we can't hear you.
Ruben's just joined the audio.
Ruben. It's Krista. Can you hear us, or can you? Jump in.
Hello, everyone. Oh. Can everybody
yep.
hear me now?
Yep. Thanks.
Hi all. Thanks for joining our call at Subgroup B today. We'll be continuing the IDN section. Which will start at line 31 of 275, which is the section on IDM. So the question we need to address now was a question from our initial report, number 275C5. Which was an implementation guidance that we had general agreement to support IDNA 2008 for its successor with applicable label generation rules, which for the root zone are called root zone label generation rules. And it would be informed with which scripts are supported, and avoid pre-delegation testing for scripts that are well known in those label generation rules. We have two agreements with that proposal from the registry stakeholder group and from the brand registry group. We have a comment from ICANN.org, which was not in either agreement or disagreement or diversions, that they know that IDNA 2008 posed some constraints and it only suggests itself a baseline measure, and so additional constraints could be imposed by registries. And they mentioned some constraints that are identified by the IDN guideline for the second-level labels, although this idea is not relevant to our discussion of subsequent procedures since we are discussing the top level, we are discussing the root zone. And they also mentioned that pre-delegation testing would allow for this constraint, but this only would only apply for second levels. And also in this item, we have concerns and divergence from ALAC, and they mentioned that pre-delegation tests cover the testing of different aspects that could potentially impact the stability and manageability of register operations, such as DNS, WIS, EPP, IDN, data escrow, and documentation. IDN variants introduce added complexity to register operations, even where compliant with IDNA 2008 or RGRs. Consequently, ALEC believes it may be prudent to continue with PDT practices. One comment here is that most of this answer was not mentioned about IDN, which was the discussion point here. So we can note that their comments specifically for IDNs in this item, and perhaps refer the other items to things like certification of registry service providers, which is more in line with the topic of PDT, not specifically IDN. I see no questions here, so let's move on. Line 36, this is more of a section header of the report, mentioned that WorkTrack discussed variants of IDN TLDs and is aware of the IDN efforts which culminated in the IDN variant TLD framework. The suggestion from the work group was that variant TLDs could be allowed, provided the same allocated to the same register operator by force of written agreement of some policy of cross-variant bundling, not defining which policy was this, and the applicable rules in labor generation was already available when the application was submitted. This was agreed by the brand registry group and ALAC, although ALAC has one concern, that the manageability and associated risks will depend on the nature and number of variants, and therefore a conservative approach might be appropriate, especially while deciding on the number of variants. The registry stakeholder group also agreed by proposing a new idea that the text should be clarified to state that variant ID and TLDs need to be operated by the same backend registry service provider, not only the same registry operator and not only at delegation launch, but including transitions. Currently, that's exactly what ended up being in the IDN variant TLD framework, but that's three lines below. So let's go in order before that. At next line 40, we had a comment from Iconorg with a new idea that Iconorg would like to make the PDP aware of the IDN variant TLD framework, which is something that we can also add to the work group, and that's what in line 42 below. But before that, we had one comment here from the IPC that IDN TLDs, which are variants of registered trademarks, should be subject to legal rights objections. This was discussed in perhaps or not in WorkTrack 3, and we could refer it to subgroup C if subgroup C hasn't already ended their discussion. So we need to refer it to the full work group for the, to consider the comments, and then if they say that the comment needs to be further analyzed by the work group, then further analyzed. But this is somewhat out of scope for this subgroup, although definitely in scope for this PDP. And we had one of the comments that was one of the recommendations from the IDN Variant CLG framework that was published and is published in those URLs. So these are not direct responses to the our public comment period, but it's clear that they already take into account much of our discussions. And they suggest that IDN Variant CLGs must be allocated to the same entity and same registry service provider. So they agree with the idea of restricting to the same entity as the idea of restricting to the same registry service provider, which is also an idea that was presented by the registry stakeholder group. So we can refer both of them with the single idea to the full working group. Any questions, hands, none so far? Then go to 27D1, which asked if the cross-variant TLD should be handled by the PDP, by the implementation of the policy that would be in the output of this PDP, or defined by each individual registry operator. And we had ALEC supporting, and both ALEC and registry for the group supporting the idea of each registry defining its cross-variant TLD policy, which is totally different from what ended up appearing in the ICANN variant TLD framework, which strictly prescribed one specific policy to be adopted by all registries. So we recorded that as a disagreement and a new idea. And seeing no hands, let's move to 275E1. For the recommendation requiring one chartered IDN TLD, can the more general ideogram be made more precise and predictable by identifying specific scripts? So this wasn't a yes or no question, but how it could be improved in predictability. The ALEC suggested most of these should focus on what are known as CGK scripts, Chinese, Japanese, Korean, but they suggested further work to be made by specific language communities. The registry stakeholder group was more prescriptive in suggesting scripts of the ISO standard where a single charter represented an idea and mentioned specifically four of those scripts, Hangul, HAN, Simplified HAN, and Traditional HAN, as being allowed, or a single charter where a single property is Hangul or HAN. So they were pretty prescriptive in saying this could be the focus of one chartered TLD. And Steve is typing, but while he types, we can move forward and then go back to what Steve will raise with us. In 27E2, the question was whether the bundling across variant TLDs should be unified for our future new TLDs or should be TLD specific. And the registry stakeholder group and registry stakeholder group suggesting interesting those specific policies to each registry operator. DALAC also mentioned this, but also mentioned the policy process for the IDN warranty of the implementation. So, which, as we know, ended up suggesting exactly the opposite. So this is something that ALAC might want to take into account, because when they responded, the IDN warranty of the framework was not published, and now that comment is somewhat contradictory. So it would be interesting for ALAC to reconsider that position and say what they prefer in that regard. Next comment from Lemerich is a new idea that once a domain name is allocated, all variants should be blocked. The activation of the event should be up to registrar. That leads to more consumer protection and limited confusion. I believe that's exactly what I can variant LG framework, but let's move on. ESSEC mentioned a good number of concerns in this. They mentioned that the problem of synchronization of TLDs has been studied previously, and it was clear there are no general applicable approach to this. They also mentioned that the goal should be for them to behave the same in all own instances that occurs. They mentioned the RSTAT, which studied the .ngo and .ong proposal, which was one of the proposals that the work group already also looked into. As I mentioned, that the work group should look at the findings of this Registry Services Technical Evaluation Panel. And we have what's published in the IDN variant TLD report. That the same label under IDN variant TLD should be registered to the same entity. So the divergence here is that the framework does not predict this would be up to registry, but this would be fixed and would be this way. So we recorded that as both divergence and new ideas. In 2.7.5.E3, we asked if there are any non-specific scripts that would require manual validation or invalidation of proposed IDN TLD. The ALAC mentioned that under the current IDN regime, this manual validation is unlikely to occur, and the registry stakeholder group mentioned passages of RFCs that of some script languages that would be likely candidates for manual analysis. So either way, this was a yes or no question, but more of a question of flagging possible wishes with automatic validation and invalidation of TLD. In 2.7.5.E4, we also don't have a specific prescription, but more of an open-ended question. For IDN variant TLDs, how should the work track take into account the board requested and at the point that was made yet to be developed IDN variant management framework? ALAC suggested that the work track should consider its recommendation as inputs, which is exactly what we are doing, incorporating the recommendations here. ESSEC also believes the same, that we should, work group should take this into account so we can cross it done. And the Registry Stakeholder Group said that while they supported the concept of a harmonized framework, they believe that IDN studies were already enough to base policy development, so they suggest to not take this framework that was at the time developed into account. And obviously, the ICANN variant framework obviously proposed that it is followed, and it says that by saying that existing policies and associated procedures for TLD must be updated to accommodate the recommendation for IDN variant TLDs. All remaining existing TLD policies must apply to IDN variant TLDs unless otherwise identified. So this, let's just give people some time to think, because this would end 275 IDN section. Any comments, questions, complaints? Nope. Then that's it. And we now move to 276 with Krista. Thank you.
Thanks, Ruben. As Ruben mentioned, moving to the next tab on security and stability on 2.7.6, there's some initial, a few little comments there. The first one is from the CCTRT report mentioning recommendation 14 to negotiate amendments to existing registry agreements with subsequent rounds of new GTLDs to include provisions in the agreements to provide incentives, including financial incentives for registries, especially open registries, to adopt proactive anti-abuse measures. We then have another one related to the CCTRT report, recommendation 16, to study the relationship between specific registry operators, registrars, and technical DNS abuse by commissioning ongoing data collection, and that this should be published ideally quarterly and no less than annually, and to identify registries and registrars that need to undergo greater scrutiny and investigation, and also to identify abuse phenomenon where ICANN should put in place an action plan to respond to such studies, remediate problems identified, and define future ongoing data collection. We have a comment from the ALAC making a suggestion that processes should defer to the SAC for further recommendations in a number of areas, including dotlist domains and name collisions. And they note that there's no cause for urgency surrounding the further introduction of TTLDs due to time. Due time should be given to the SAC to explore the security and stability implications of various proposals before a new round begins. And then we have the SAC with a comment that further research is needed to understand the scale of the domain name abuse that is attributable to the introduction of new Gs in the 2012 round. They also have the concern that there are no questions or preliminary recommendations in the initial report on the subject of domain name abuse, and that further research is needed to understand the scale of the abuse, and go on to say that the SAC is highly likely to study this issue further in the near future. So I guess we can maybe come back to those. We want to take those items specifically to the full working group, maybe at the end of this once we get to this section. So I'm just going to jump into the first question, which is on line 7, saying in the 2012 round, some applicants ended up applying for reserved or otherwise ineligible strings, causing them to later withdraw or be rejected. The work track suggests the following as implementation guidance, that the application submission system do an all feasible algorithmic checking of TLDs to better ensure that only valid ASCII and IDN TLDs can be submitted, and then a proposed TLD that doesn't fit all the conditions for automatic checking, a manual review should occur to validate or invalidate the TLD. We have the Brown Registry Group, New Star, the BC and the registry stakeholder group all agreeing with this. The BC adds in the new idea that defined timelines for the manual review process to enable the applicant to make plans accordingly should be provided. And the registry stakeholder group has the idea that the RZ LGR, while it's evolving and adding new scripts periodically, will only be able to process certain scripts for checking. And therefore, the ideal algorithmic tool to validate apply for TLDs, ICANN will need to provide alternative methods to validate apply for labels using other scripts not supported by the RZ LGR. We also have a comment or an idea from ICANN.org that the system to check applied for GTLDs against specific lists such as reserve names list, the ISO 3166 list, and the root zone LGR could be automated, and that it would determine the RZ LGRs defined for the scripts of these labels would determine the complexity of the implementation of the algorithmic checks. Any comments to that section 2761? Ruma's got a comment. I believe it's on another section. I believe it's more of an alert than a request. This couldn't known at the time when they responded is going to be contradictory now. Sorry, that's regarding IDNs in the prior section. I'm just going to continue on. I'll let the chat go in the meantime because I'm skipping back. Thanks, Justine. It relates to one of the questions that arose up in the other section regarding the ALAC comment. Jumping to line 13, the question on 2.7.6.C.2, for root zone scaling, the work track generally supports raising the delegation limit, but also agrees that ICANN should further develop root zone monitoring functionality and early warning systems as reckoned by the SAC, the RSAC, and the technical community. And we have the brand registry group and Newstar agreeing with this. We have ICANN.org with the new idea from the ICANN office of the CTO that the design of an early warning system that could monitor several aspects of the root server system could be implemented to monitor possible signs of stress on various aspects of the root server system that could result from increased size of the root zone. And it would also remind the PDP working group of our comments on this topic on the January 24th letter from ACRAM and David Conrad to the chairs of the PDP working group. I referred back to the letter to see what it actually says, so I'll add that to an action item. The next comment from the registry stakeholder group notes the SAC recommendations, and there's four of them. The first one is the SAC recommendations are, one, ICANN should, one, continue developing monitoring and early warning capability with respect to the root zone scaling. Secondly, focus on the rate of change for the root zone rather than total number of delegated strings for a given calendar year. Three, structure its obligation to new GTLD registries so that can delay their addition to the root zone in case of DNS service instabilities. And finally, fourth, investigate and catalog the long-term obligations and maintain a larger root zone. We also have a new comment or a new idea from Alexander Schubert. It's mostly around pricing rather than security, and the pricing was addressed in the financial section. So they're saying that the increased volume might result in or increased price might result in a more manageable application stack with less speculative registrations and increase the speed per applications. And they surmise that increasing the price would reduce the volume, and would also decrease any issues on the root zone. The next comment is from the ALAC, suggesting that any cap should be based on what the root zone system can handle technically, and it should initially be determined. Well, that's pretty much it. And then finally, we have a comment from the SAC. It's a bit of a long one here, with a bunch of factors to take into account, and reiterates advice from SAC 100. Pretty much that will lower the barriers to making applications by reducing the price, and that by doing so, in 2.51E6 becomes important based on how many more TLDs will be introduced, and whether ICANN can scale its operations to handle that many TLDs, which poses several security and stability issues. Not so much whether the root zone can accommodate additional entries, but whether ICANN org's operations can scale. And they gave a couple excerpts. Recommendation 4, ICANN should investigate and catalog the long-term obligations of maintaining a larger root zone and investigate how increasing the size of the root zone will impact activities such as the DNSSEC, key signing, key rollover, IANA root zone change requests, transfers, contract negotiations, et cetera. And that the recommendation should include an acceptable rate of change to the root zone instead of a yearly delegation limit, and that the obligations to new gTLD registries should be structured so that their addition to the root zone can be delayed in case of any DNS service instabilities. Any comments to that section? No hands, but there's some comments. And as I see that Alexander Schubert's comment is marked, take to larger group for discussion. Did we mark the comments in 2.7.6 at lines 3 to 6 in security and stability to take to the full working group for discussion? I believe it was done in the prior section on costing, and maybe if somebody could help me to make sure that we did actually note that as something to bring to the full working group, that would be great. And then Steve brings up the question, are we acknowledging and accepting of ICANN being a so-called registry of registries, i.e. does the community envision ICANN approving a few thousand, hundreds of thousands, millions of gTLDs to be applied to the root, and should there be a cap? So I'll let that conversation continue while I jump to the next section, and it's a nice short one. So line 21 the question on 2.7.6.E.1, to what extent will discussions about the continuous data-driven analysis of root stability report and the analysis on delegation rate impact the working group discussions on this topic? How about the input sought and received from the SAC, the RSAC, and ICANN org discussed below in Section F under the heading Root Zone Scaling? And it's the exact same comment that I just read out from the SAC. And Steve mentions that the prior comment was providing a reference to the question mentioned in the FSAC question. Seeing no comments on 6.E.1, go to the last section, which is 2.7.6.E.2, with a question, the SAC strongly discourages allowing emoji in domain names at any level, and the work track is supportive of this position. Do you have any views on this issue? And the RSG, Le Merit, the IPC, the SAC, and the Registry Stakeholder Group all agree with this. And the Registry Stakeholder Group provides the additional idea that although not interfering with already registered emoji SLDs and GTLDs, and that we would support reviewing this decision if when the IETF, IDNA standards allow them, if that ever happens. So that is all of Section 2.7.6 on security and stability. Any comments? A couple of people are typing. Just going to give it a few seconds here in case something pops up. She makes a comment regarding taking it to the full group and notes that, albeit in a summarized fashion, emphasizing new ideas as it relates to agreement, new ideas, concerns, divergence will be sent to the full working group. So in the meantime, we'll prep for section 2.7.7. It's a bit of a long one, so we're hoping we can make some progress on this today to see how far we can get to save us a little bit of time for the next call. So the first one is just some general comments. We're going to see those on the first lines. The first one is marquee, and this entire section is pretty much based on fees in the prior section, which we already discussed. But there's one other item, I guess, it's mostly related to the process regarding brands and the fees related to it. So I think we're bringing this up here not because of the fees, but because for process purposes and how they should be dealt with. So for Marquee, they have the new idea that there should be a fee for a single applicant closed brand registry where the evaluators do not need to review a business plan, and therefore it should be lower processing costs than a open registry. We have a divergence from INTA that believes the application fee should be relatively high to dissuade frivolous applications, and that there should be a reduced application fee for brand owners who wish to apply for a GTLD that fully incorporates their trademark. We have a comment from Vanda that suggests ongoing evaluation of the application fee be monitored by the community to the extent that the whole external support as independent panels shall be registered as a list of persons open to join in different panels anytime for specific tasks they are experts. For each application, when needed, a reduced panel 3 will be selected for a working day to analyze the application. And finally, one from Marquee that the same idea, single applicant closed brands should have a lower fee because they don't need a business plan review. So that's that section. Reading the comments, Justine has a comment on the prior section on 2.7.6.E.2. I just saw today a Vice News report about American Domain Investor reselling emojis under the .WS CCTLD. Had a scope for us, but interesting note in context of SAC's position on emojis. Yeah, but they also note that the ones in prior should not, or at least the Registered Stakeholder Group noted that we shouldn't interfere with already existing emoji SLDs and GTLDs. I'm not sure if that helps, but just mentioning it. Moving along to the SAC comment that has notes that publicly traded companies must not be exempt from the financial evaluation. They go on to say the barrier to be publicly traded is very low in some jurisdictions, such as penny stocks in the U.S., and such companies do not undergo extensive screening. And then they also go on to say no applicant should be allowed to self-certify that has the financial means to support its proposed business model. That self-certification does not provide the surety, and there's great variance in requirements from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. They also, for technical and operational evaluations, a full IT operation security policy from applicants must be required. And then they mentioned the goal of the evaluation is for the applicant to demonstrate its expertise and assure the security and stability of the operations of the registry. We then jump into the first question, which is 2.7.7.C.1. For all evaluations in pursuit of transparency published during the procedure, any clarifying questions and CQ responses for public questions to the extent possible. And we have agreement from the Brand Registry Group. We have longer comment from ICANN.org that says they request what is meant by during the procedure as well as possible consequences and the implications that the PDP working group might want to consider, discuss, and consider prior to finalizing their recommendations. And they go on to say this may no longer be a consideration. And sorry, they're referring to the 2012 round in the financial evaluation. And in the preliminary recommendation, 2.7.7.C.1.13 suggests that the responses to the revised financial questions be publicly posted. However, the PDP working group altered preliminary recommendation C13 based on community input that they may want to consider the potential implication. Sorry, I'm making a bit of a mess of it here, but potential implication to consider is that doing so would provide applicants with larger priority numbers with an advantage of having the answers available to them, making the evaluation less meaningful. This would then create a disadvantage for applicants that have smaller priority numbers who would be putting in the initial effort to formulate a response to the clarifying question that could then be leveraged by others. So I guess the question is, during the procedure, does that mean kind of real time during the application so that those applications, so those answers could be used by other members in their own responses? So perhaps we should take that to the full working group to respond to. The next comment is from Newstar, that they're in agreement and that only the responses relate to the public portions of the application should be disclosed. Same with Fairwinds Partners and the Registry Stakeholder Group, along, and they also note the no confidential information should be published. Then we have a new idea from the BC that mentions that ICANN will not provide financial models or tools. Why not make these options available? That might make the evaluation process simpler and make it easier to prepare an application. And for some applicants, it's best to create a single-purpose vehicle coalition entity to apply. In this case, we will need the system to be able to measure the viability of this new entity that would not have multi-year financials. I'm going to pause there for any comments on 2.7.7C1. Justine notes Why is ICANN's order to clarify what is meant by during the procedure as an agreement, even though tagged as clarification also? Julie says it's marked as agreement because the comment says it's feasible from a program operations perspective. It is feasible to publish CQs and responses to public questions of the applicants. So it doesn't seem to disagree, but ask for clarification. See no hands, so I'm just going to continue while that conversation develops. On line 17, question on 2.7.7.C.2, for all evaluations, restrict scoring to a pass-fail scale, 0 to 1 points only. The Brand Registry Group, Newstar Registry Stakeholder Group, and Validaeus all agree with its recommendation. Any comments on that section? Hey, Justine, typing. I'm just going to jump to the next one in the meantime. So the question is going back on ICANN org's question to clarify and whether that's changed to a new idea. And Steve mentions yes. So I'm going to jump to the next section, which is 2.7.7.C.3. The question is, for all evaluations and analysis of CQs, guidance to the applicant, guidebook, knowledge articles, supplemental notes, etc., from the 2012 round need to sufficiently be analyzed with the goal of improving the clarity of all questions asked of applicants such that the need for the issuance of CQs is lessened. We have the Brand Registry Group, Newstar, Fairwinds, the Registry Stakeholder Group, and Validaeus all agreeing with this, and the Registry Stakeholder Group also cautions against making substantive changes to the questions that would make subsequent procedures incompatible with the 2012 round. Any comments to section 2.7.7.C.3? They're still making sure that the prior comment is flagged to go to the full working group, and I believe it has. In the meantime, I'm jumping to section line 28, 2.7.7.C.4, with a question for technical and operational evaluation. If a RSP pre-approval program is established, a new technical evaluation will not be required for applicants that have either selected a pre-approved RSP in its application submission or if it commits to only using a pre-approved RSP during their transition to delegation phase. The Brand Registry Group, Newstar, the Registry Stakeholder Group, and Validaeus all agree with this, and the Registry Stakeholder Group also notes that all other applications using the RSP can rely on that technical evaluation, and if a registry operator uses different business rules for different TLDs, then all different functions and variations of those different functions should be tested and approved. Any questions to section 2.7.7.C.4? Seeing no hands, no comments to that section, it looks like we've now concluded the entire section, and we're all good with that. Jumping to line 33, 2.7.7.C.5 for the question, for technical and operational evaluation, consolidate the technical evaluation across applications as much as feasible. Even when not used, using a pre-approved RSP, for example. If there are multiple applications using the same non-pre-approved RSP, that RSP would only have to be evaluated once as opposed to being evaluated for each individual application. The Brand Registry Group, Newstar Registry Stakeholder Group, and Validaeus all agree, and the Registry Stakeholder adds to the extent that the underlying technical evaluations are the same. Any comments to that section? Seeing no hands. Line 38 on question 2.7.7.C.6, the question for technical and operational evaluation for applications that outsource technical or operational services to third parties. Applicants should specify which services are being performed by them and which are being performed by third parties when answering questions. The Brand Registry Group, Newstar, and the Registry Stakeholder Group, along with Validaeus, all agree with this. And the Registry Stakeholder Group adds that suggests components that could be separated into categories. And they provide an example such as the SRS, EPP, RDDS, and publishing to data escrow, along with a data escrow provider, DNS provider, and abuse monitoring, handling, and RDAP could all be areas that, or different components that could be separated out. Any questions to 2.7.7.B.6? Cheryl Noakes, she has to leave. Thanks, Cheryl. And hopefully we can do one more section here on line 43, 2.7.7.C.7 with a question for technical and operational evaluation that do not require full IT operation security policy from applicants. We have the Brand Registry Group, ICANN.org, and Newstar, along with the Registry Stakeholder Group, that all agree with this. And then we have, just scrolling one down, ICANN also adds that they encourage the working group to consider this recommendation in the context of ICANN's mission to, quote, ensure the stable and secure operation of the Internet's unique identifying systems. Then we have the RRSG has a divergent point of view that the tech and operational evaluations are still needed, especially for applicants that are using RSP to support dozens of TLDs. And we have also a divergent point of view from the GAC that believes the applicant evaluation and RSP pre-approval process should include consideration of potential security threats and that tools such as ICANN's DAAR to identify any potential security risks associated with an application. Jeff notes that I don't see those as necessarily divergent, and these things can be assessed without the full plan. Any other comments to section 2.7.7.C.7? And then brings up the very great point of what is DAAR, and I'm hoping somebody else can answer that because I have no idea. I see Jeff is typing. In the meantime, I'm just going to do maybe one or two more sections here if I can. Section 2.7.7.C.8 for technical and operational evaluation, retain the same questions, excerpt 30B, the security policy. The Brand Registry Group, Newstar, and the Registry Stakeholder Group all agree with this. The Registry Stakeholder Group also notes, except for possible clarifications, as much as they were in 2012 for fairness and comparable results. Any comments to that section? And it's noted that there's a link with what the DAAR is, and it's noted the Domain Abuse Activity Report. Jumping to section 2.7.7.C.9 with a question for technical and operational evaluation, applicants must be able to demonstrate their technical and operational capability to run a registry operation for the purpose that the applicant sets out, either by submitting its evaluation
at application time or agreeing to use a previously approved technical infrastructure. We had the Brand Registry Group, Neustar, the Registry Stakeholder Group, and Validaeus all agreeing with this. And the Registry Stakeholder Group said if a registry operator selects or switches, any pre-approved RFP will have to satisfy the technical requirements. And that if they use a different business rules for different TLDs, then all different functions and variations of those functions should be tested and approved. And ask Jeff, how would the DAR apply in the application phase? Going to do one last section. We're going to call it so section 2.7.7.C.10 with a question for tech and operation evaluation. It may be aggregated and or consolidated to the maximum extent possible that generates process efficiencies, including instances where both multiple applications are submitted by the same applicant and multiple applications from different applicants share a common technical infrastructure. And the Brand Registry Group, Neustar, and Validaeus all agree with this. So I'm going to stop there for this call and then jump to the next item on the agenda for any other business. And there's some comments still going on regarding the DAR. So we have two more minutes. We're perhaps suggesting in the interest of for the, before we reach COBE, to be able to finish this section. So we're discussing perhaps extending the next call to ensure that we can finish this section. I don't think we're going to need the extra time, so I think we should be fine, but maybe we should note in case we don't manage to get through it that we might need to spend an extra 10 minutes at the end of that call just in case, but I don't really see the need for that. Any other business? There's some comments on still going on about the DAR. In the meantime, I'd like to note everyone that our next call is on February 26th at 2000 UTC. And if there's any other questions or comments, otherwise I'll come to a close on this call. As always, I'd like to thank everyone for attending. And hope to see you on our next call. I see multiple people are typing. Maybe we'll bring up the comments. We'll revert back to the DAR on the next call just to make sure that we've properly addressed all the questions there. And we'll circle back. So thanks, everyone, for your time, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, Krista. Meeting has been adjourned.